Okay, so thanks for having put this paper on the program. So Emmanuel was a great man and impressive scholar, and I think it's a bit hard to say this in words, but he served as a role model for many macroeconomists in this profession and shaped with his inspiring way generations of young people. And he was also very generous with his time and supported young people big time. And also I personally felt his support through the years, and I'm happy to give a paper here today, and it means much to me to be part of this today. And what I would like to give here is a paper that actually belongs to a research agenda on firm heterogeneity and growth that I know that Emmanuel liked a lot and supported a lot, and received valuable feedback in the past on this research. So this is a work in progress and a new project in this area. And it's joint work with Philippe Antonin and Pete and Yui. And we're going to talk about good and bad rents.
You have to get closer to the microphone.
Okay. Good. And so we're going to talk about good and bad rents and what it does in terms of research misallocation. So kind of the starting point of this line of research is that there is a recent literature documenting that rents have been more and more concentrated among top firms and have been growing. And the literature also discusses that this might be a bad thing for growth and welfare. Now, one particular aspect that the literature hasn't focused so much on is that it might matter what the source of those underlying rents and markups are those firms can charge. And this is kind of precisely where what we're going to emphasize here. So we're going to ask, we're going to emphasize different sources of markups through the lens of our theory, and then talk about what it implies in terms of R&D misallocation across firms. So which firm should be the one doing R&D? Now, what is the distinct source of markups that we're going to focus on? We're going to, through the lens of our model, firms that can charge high markups, they're going to have an edge over their competitors. Now, this edge can come from two sources. One is that they might have a high process efficiency. So think about the organizational capital of a firm that makes them very productive at producing at low marginal cost. The second distinct source of high markups is the quality dimension. So some firms might have higher quality products and due to that are able to charge high markups. Now, why does the distinction matter for growth? We argue that for process efficiency, this is something unobservable. The organizational capital is unobservable. Arguably, it's hard to copy it or to reverse engineer it. So there are less spillover across firms in this dimension. However, quality is different. Quality you can reverse engineer. It's observable. And this is the dimension where innovations build upon each other. So there is this standing on the shoulder of giants effect, and there is a significant knowledge spillover across firms intertemporally. So this is why the two sources matter for growth. So what are we doing here? So we first develop a theoretical framework of firm heterogeneity, of markup heterogeneity that speaks to those questions and is an endogenous growth theory, of course. And then we go to the data and we look at French manufacturing data and quantify the two distinct sources of markup heterogeneity in the French data. We solve a decentralized equilibrium in our framework and compare it to the planner solution and come up with quantitative statement how much of R&D misallocation there is in French manufacturing. Of course, why are we doing all this and why are we interested in that? It ties in nicely with policy questions. Of course, in practice, we see subsidies. Typically, we see subsidies that just depend on size, not on markups of firms. and policymakers cannot distinguish between the different sources of markups. And eventually we're going to go there with this project and also talk about imperfect policy tools and what they do. But I'm not going to talk about this today. So what do we find? The planner, of course, wishes to undo static inefficiency due to markups, like the markup dispersion he wants to remove. But on top of that, social planner also engages in reallocating in a more efficient way the R&D effort across firms. And this is kind of the R&D misallocation. So for the result, the source of markup matters big time. Because what we're going to see is that the social planner particularly wants to reallocate market shares towards the high quality producer, the high step size producer, and away, relatively away from the high process efficiency firms. And this is because there is this growth spillovers in the quality dimension. So this changes a little bit how we think about our big firms now too big, or should high markup firms be subsidized and expand? Well, what is crucial here is the source of why some firms are big and can charge high markups, and that matters. So it can easily be the case and that the large firms should actually shrink in size or should increase in size, depending on the source of the markup heterogeneity. Now, when we put numbers on this framework, we're going to see that this can generate quite big effects on long-run growth. And the first preliminary results where we quantify things suggest that we get results in the order of magnitude of 63 basis points of additional growth the social planner would achieve in the long run compared to the decentralized equivalent. So the structure of the talk is that I'm going to talk about the theoretical framework that this economy is based in. Then solve for the decentralized equilibrium, contrast it with the planner solution, and then put numbers on the framework. So the preference side is completely standard in this framework. So we have time additively separable preferences, log preferences over a final output good. This final output good is produced with a unit interval of different intermediate inputs that come at the quality QI. The final output is used for two purposes. It's used as a consumption good and it's used as overhead. And I'm going to talk more about overhead next. So all the action is how those this unit interval of intermediate input is produced. That's all the main action in the model. So what we assume is that there are J different firms, fixed set of firms, and those firms, they differ in two dimensions. First, they differ in their process efficiency, and I'm going to talk about what this means. And second, they're going to differ in their step sizes of quality innovations. This will then lead to endogenously to different responses in their R&D activity and endogenously to a different distribution of products that they produce and of different product quality levels those firms have. What is the process efficiency? So what we assume here is that all the firms can produce in all the lines, irrespective of the quality, with a linear technology and labor, where the productivity is given by this var phi here and differs across firms. So for simplicity, we just focus on two different firms, a binary level of process efficiency, high and low, and high process efficiency firm are the ones that can just produce at lower marginal cost, irrespective of the quality of a particular product in this unit interval of line. And kind of how to think about it is conceptually that it might be tied to something like organizational capital that is very persistent over time, but differs across firms. Just in terms of notation, delta is the differential between the high and low productivity firms. Second dimension of primitive heterogeneity across firms is the quality step sizes. So we assume that all the firms have access to R&D technology, so and that's kind of how they can bump up the quality levels at which the knowledge to produce at a particular quality. So more specifically, each firm can spend Psi C units of research labor. And by doing so, one line is randomly drawn, and the frontier quality in this line is multiplied by factor gamma, J, which is firm specific, and the firm acquires the knowledge to produce at this higher quality in this line I. Now, this step of quality improvement can take on two values. Some firms have big quality step, JB, gamma B, and some small quality steps, gamma S. Again, the differential quality steps is given by capital gamma. Now, to focus entirely on research misallocation, we're going to actually assume that the total amount of research labor, C, is exogenously given. So it's fixed. So it's all about how the research labor is divided up across those J firms that is pinning down the growth rate in the economy. So there is no trade-off how much to invest and how much to save. Okay. So this is not is out of the window. So we just focus on research misallocation in this sense. So it's all about who is doing who is using the R&D labor. Yeah. So now with those two binary types, we end up in total with four different type of firms. So we have high process efficiency, big step size, high process efficiency, small step size, low process efficiency, big step size, and low process efficiency, small step size. And we assume that there's just an exogenous fraction phi k of those different types. And just in terms of notation, SK denotes the share, the market share of the different types in the economy. Yeah. And S, we're going to use later, is going to be the share of high, the market share of total high process efficiency firms. Now, so far, the framework was very linear. So it's a little bit, it's set up to lead to corner solution. In order to generate an interior solution, both in a decentralized framework as well as for the planner, we're going to add per period overhead cost, which is a quadratic, so a convex function of the number of line a firm is producing. So without that, in a decentralized economy, as I'm going to specify it next, what would happen is that the kind of the good type of firms with a high process efficiency and a high step size would just expand and take over the entire market. Now, this overhead cost prevents them from doing so, because what they're going to do is they're going to expand still, but eventually they're going to reach a steeper part of this overhead cost scale and then stop there. So this generates an interior solution and, as I will show next, a balanced growth path with a kind of a stationary distribution of firm sizes. So this is, creates a boundary of the firm in a decentralized environment and an interior solution for the planner's problem. Yeah. So what is the decentralized economy we're going to picture here? So the final output market and the labor market is perfectly competitive. The main action is in the intermediate input production. There we assume Bertrand competition among all the different firms, which have different quality levels in a particular line I. So what Bertrand competition means in this framework is that there will always be a best and a second best firm in quality adjusted marginal cost space. So one firm has the lowest quality adjusted marginal cost, and that will be the leading firm, the best firm, and the one that is producing. With Bertrand competition, this leading firm can is setting the quality adjusted price equal to the quality adjusted marginal cost of the second best firm in the market. So what this generates is that we have a markup distribution across lines, across firms, that depends on the identity of the leading firm and the identity of the second best firm in a particular product line. So what pins down the markup is the, both the quality gap between the leading and second best firm and the process efficiency gap between the leading and second best firm. Now the profits are then just basically sales times 1/1 minus the markup. Sales is equal to Y because we have a Coctava structure, so that's very simple. So operating profits of a given line is just given by Y times 1 minus 1 over the markup, and the markup is this kind of rich animal because it depends on the identity of the second best firm as well, not only on the identity of the leading firm. So this leads then to two individual state variables in this problem. One is that the number of line a firm is the second, the first best producer and is producing, and the second state individual state variable is the fraction of line that it face competition from high type second best producers. So this means that the profits they get from n lines with a fraction of h high type second best producers is given by these are the number of lines where they face a high type competitor, and these are the number of lines where they face a low type competitor. Important is that in both cases the markup they can charge is proportional to their product of the process efficiency of a firm K and their step size gamma K. So those are the operating profits, and then the firm problem is just the firm is choosing their R&D effort over time in order to maximize the value of the firm. The value of the firm is just the discounted sum of profits after overhead cost and after R&D spending, where they take into account that there is an exogenous rate at which they're going to lose line again, exogenous to the firm, which is given by the rate of creative destruction.
And so, sorry, can you just remind me what NR is, the number of...
N is the number of line a firm is the best producer, is the best quality owner and producers. So this is a firm that has N line, and a fraction H of those it faces high process efficiency second best firm. Good. Yeah, good. So this is kind of the firm problem, the dynamic firm problem, and with this quadratic overhead cost, it turns out to be a very tractable, simple dynamic programming problem because it's kind of a linear quadratic problem. So you can solve it by paper and pencil. What we then do is, for today, we're going to focus on a balanced growth path. A balanced growth path is defined as a path where all the quantities grow at constant rates, and there will be an endogenous growth rate in this economy. So the firm size distribution and market shares of the different types will be endogenous but stationary along a balanced growth path, and the gross growth factor of this economy, or the growth rate of this economy, is just pinned down by the sales-weighted geometric averages of the different step sizes of the different firms, where it's raised to some power, which is just the rate of creative destruction. So this focuses on really this R&D misallocation. So it's along a balanced growth path. All the R&D activity is proportional to the number of lines a firm has. So it all that matters, because the stock of R&D research is fixed, is how much of the market share the high step size firms have compared to the low step size.
This is a question I should have asked before clarifying. So the fraction of high firms to low firms is constant. I mean, they're not changing over time.
No, it's not persistent. Yes, it's right. Persistent. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a simplifying assumption. That's sort of what we also like, because when we look in the data, we see a lot of persistence in TFPR. So it seems to be something that is. Good. So this is the growth rate. Now, if you look at along a balanced growth path, the first order condition of the firm problem, it's very simple. So this is the cost of innovating in an additional line. This is the marginal profit after overhead that you get from innovating in an additional line, and you know that with a fraction, with a probability S bar, you're going to face a high type competitor, and with probability 1 minus S, you're going to face a low type competitor in a randomly added line. Okay? And this term just shows up because there is time discounting and there is a probability of losing the line again due to creative destruction. So the only objects that depend on a firm ID or a firm specific are this one, and the number of products. And you directly see that all that matters is the kind of the markup, which is the product of both the step size, quality step size of the firm, plus the process efficiency of the firm. So only the product var phi k and gamma k enters this equation, and we can directly see that firms with that can charge higher markups because they have a larger product of those two factors, they're going to end up with more product lines along a balanced growth curve. That's kind of the mechanics of this model. Of course, all the firms of the same type, they're going to end up with the same size along the balanced growth path, and R&D spending is just proportional to size along the balanced growth path. Yeah. Now, the important is the cross-sectional implication along this decentralized balanced growth path. So an object that we're going to measure in the data is TFPR. Now, this is kind of the measure that we can construct in the data. We're not going to engage in measuring markups here. But through the lens of the model, in the theory, the only reason why TFPR differs across firms is because markups differ across firms. So you can think of it as a stand-in for markups. And what we just saw is that, well, markups are just proportional across firms, proportional to the product of step size and process efficiency. So this is sort of pinning down the product of the two. Now, how we can identify it in the data is that we can also observe prices in the French data. And prices, in fact, are proportional to the step size of a firm. Because with this Bertrand competition, what happens is that if you're a high step size firms, you can charge a high markup by increasing the price. Because your quality gap is bigger, you can increase the nominal price. So this is a distinct prediction from if you have a high markup because you have a high process efficiency. Because if you have a high markup because you have a high process efficiency, you just have a lower marginal cost, but you don't change the price. So by observing prices together with TFPR, we can actually split up the two potential underlying sources of markup heterogeneity in the data. So we construct TFPQ, which is just defined as TFPR divided by the price level, and that is across firms proportional to the process efficiency. Okay. So this is kind of how it maps into our measurement. Before we go into the calibration and measurement, I'm going to talk about the planner solution here, or the planner's problem. So the planner is just maximizing welfare, as always, subject to constraints and law of motions. An important additional assumption is that we assume that as private firms, also the planner needs to develop the knowledge to produce at the particular quality within a particular firm. So the planner cannot just run some firms as R&D labs and then transfer this knowledge to a different firm. So it needs to be done within the firm because you need to learn how to do it within the firm. That's the constraint we put. Good. Yeah. So then the planner's problem is quite standard. Now, of course, what the planner wants to do is the planner wants to undo the markup dispersion across lines due to heterogeneity of markups. This is kind of a static inefficiency that the planner can undo and will undo. That's relatively well understood. But more interestingly is how does the planner now determine the market share? Now, the market share are chosen also to optimize in the growth dimension, because the planner understands, of course, if you allocate more product lines to high step size firms, this has a dynamic effect. It creates these spillovers and can, through this, increase the growth rate of the economy. So in the paper, we show that the optimal formula for the number of lines allocated to a particular firm K is given by this expression. And what you see is that, of course, you put some weight on both, var phi k, the process efficiency, and gamma k. So everything else equal, if a firm has a high process efficiency, the planner allocates more production lines to this firm. And if a firm has a higher step size, gamma k, the firm is going to be bigger along the balanced growth path by the planner. However, and this is kind of the important message, is unlike in the decentralized optimality condition, where just the product entered, here it also enters the product, because this one you can actually put together here, but then the gamma, the step size, enters as an additional term. So, and this is precisely showing that the planner puts more weight on the step size, the quality step size, because it generates this spillover, this knowledge spillover. So this is why the planner will have an incentive to tilt the market share towards the high step size firms against the high process efficiency firms, given the same market level. Yeah. Yep.
Is it really because it's one is quality and the other is production efficiency, or is it because in one you can grow and in the other it's always just a constant difference?
No, I think what matters is that you kind of, in the quality dimension, you have this stepwise innovation. I think it's not what matters that you can grow and there is an endogeneity. What really matters is that in the quality dimension, you really build on the shoulder of giants. So you have this stepwise innovation.
Right. If we had that also for production efficiency, it would also...
That's right. Then I think you would go back to they're undistinguishable, or they have no implications for the group. Absolutely. That is the key assumption. And I think the nice thing is that we can empirically distinguish them, whereas kind of generally it's notoriously hard to get at spillovers. So we can attach spillovers to those two measures and argue that we can measure those things in the data. That's kind of how we go about it. And I think it's natural to think that in the quality dimension, if you think about them, Walmart is very efficient. So they're just something magic to their logistics. It's due to their organizational capital. It's potentially very hard to just try to replicate Walmart. However, some other firms like Apple, if Apple comes up with a touch screen for smartphones for the first time, it's more natural to think that this is something other firms can figure out and build upon and innovate. And therefore, the quality dimension there generates a spillover.
Can you find examples going the other way? I mean, think about reliability, for example, product reliability is a quality attribute, but it's protected by trade secrets usually. Whereas, I don't know, selling your production to China or whatever, you're using computers, it's easy to copy, right? I mean, so.
I'm sure that you can find
Just giving an example, I can also give you a counter example.
No, absolutely. I have no doubt that you can find counter example. We find it's natural to think about it in this dimension. I mean, I should also say, in terms of process efficiency, you could also think about it as a stand-in for instance, the ability of a firm to avoid regulation, and by avoiding regulation, lower marginal cost. You could also think about it, but again, also there, arguably, this is something that doesn't create much spillovers across firms. Or even worse, you could think about it erecting entry barriers, and by doing so, get an edge over your competitors. Yeah.
Also like franchises, a lot of these models that were production processes that innovate a lot.
Yeah, I think installing an assembly line would be just, if you just produce the same car, install an assembly line, it would just push down marginal cost, and in this sense it would be a process efficiency.
But it is a method of production method that has been successfully copied and utilized in many places.
That's right. I mean, maybe also going back to the other question, we actually, I don't have it here, but we also looked into the French data. And what we saw actually is that the growth, all the growth is not happening in TFPQ. So this suggests that also in the aggregate manufacturing sector, there is not so much activity in this sense over the time period we consider. Yeah.
Another question which you may defer, like suppose there are financial frictions, then how do you think about?
Ooh, yeah.
We should see that.
I mean, financial friction, I think for now we would think about them orthogonal to the whole problem. So we're not going to have financial frictions in here. Yeah. Okay. So I have 10 more minutes? Or?
Yeah, I think you can go on.
Okay. Good. So 12 minutes. Thank you. Good. Yeah. So this is the planner's problem. So let me. Good. Yeah. So I guess I said this already. Of course, the planner wants to, because of this externality, tilt it more towards the high step size firms. So let's show you the calibration, put some numbers on it, and then talk about welfare and wrap up. That's the plan. So what data we're going to use is the French data. So we use French data on production, labor, and capital inputs in order to compute TFPR. We also have prices, so we can construct firm level price index to divide TFPR by the price level to get a measure of TFPQ. So that's important for distinguishing the two sources of markups. Yep.
So it seems like it's pretty important to have quality adjusted prices in order to be able to center. Is the identification strategy comparing TFPR to TFPR divided by P in the cross section? Or
that's right, yeah. We're going to do that.
But it's important that P has the quality I could imagine that different firms could or could not include something about quality adjustment in the P that they were putting.
Yeah, we don't, unfortunately, we won't have a quality adjustment. So I think one thing we could do, we could just look at industry with relatively homogeneous output goods, where we think the quality dimension is not so big. But that's kind of what we are currently doing. So we don't have a quality, a measure of quality that.
But in principle, if there's bias, like depending on what happens there, like things will slip from process efficiency into the stepwise thing or vice versa. Am I right there? Or?
Yeah, I'm not so sure. Yeah, I would have to think about it. Yeah, I would have to think about it. Good. So we focus on manufacturing firms with more than 20 employees over the time period 2012 to 2019. So kind of what are the parameters we have to calibrate or we have to pin down? So we have four groups. Of course, they add up to one. So we're going to end up with three shares we have to calibrate. And then the other asymmetric parameters is the process efficiency differential and the quality step size differential. And then we have four other common parameters, which is the overhead cost, R&D cost, the rate of time preference, and just the level of the small step size, which pins down markup to a large extent. So kind of how we go about it is we think about measurement error, because measurement error is an issue in this data, and it's important to think about it. So we actually add measurement error or allow for classical measurement error in TFPR and prices and back that out, the variance in this measurement error as well in the estimation procedure. So kind of the whole idea is that the dispersion in prices, TFPR and TFPQ, and how they correlate with size, they kind of pin down all those heterogeneous parameters jointly. And then we add some more standard macro moments like the growth rate in TFP, the real interest rate, and the average level of markups to discipline the others. Yeah. And here, kind of, you see the moments that we picked. I don't have time to go through all of them. But overall, this simple model is doing a good job at capturing those moments, with one exception, which is the sales dispersion. So arguably, there are, of course, other sources of heterogeneity across firms that drive the size distribution that is unrelated to markups, because here in this model, everything goes through markups. So that's kind of also what other people have found in this literature. So just to illustrate you how this puts discipline on the parameters, let me go through three examples. So kind of the variance of log prices is, through the lens of our framework, very much related to the process efficiency differentials. The step size differential gamma. Because if the firms would be homogeneous in this dimension, then there would be no variance in prices across firms. Similarly, the TFBQ log variance is very much related to the differential in process efficiency across firms. And finally, and this is kind of an important one, TFBR is given by the sum of TFBQ and prices plus twice the covariance. So what we found in the data, I mean, for this is important to think about measurement error, because otherwise you get a division bias. But what we saw in the data is that TFBR is smaller than the sum of TFBQ and the variance in prices. So therefore, we estimate the covariance between the process efficiency and step size to be negative. This makes our mechanism powerful because that means that markups actually don't differ so much across firms, but the underlying source differ big time. So some firms can charge high markups because they have a high process efficiency, and some firms can charge high markups because they have a high step size. Good. Those are the parameters that we find. It generates kind of a interesting kind of size distribution, or most of the firms are small step size and low process efficiency. The other main parameter you can interpret are the gamma, the differential in the gamma dimension is 28%, and the process efficiency gap is 5%. Between the two type of firms. Good. So let me go through some quantitative results now. So first of all, we kind of show the decentralized market shares along the balanced growth path and compare it to what the planner would do. So the planner would, in this case, reallocate big time from the high process efficiency firms towards the high step size firms. So if you focus just on the high process efficiency share of that served by high process efficiency firms, it would go down from 32% in the decentralized market to 6%. And this kind of just reflects that the planner puts more weight on big step size compared to process efficiency. In fact, in this kind of case, the planner would shut down some of the firms completely. Good. So let's, as a last thing, talk about welfare. I have 3 minutes left, I guess. So welfare along the balanced growth path can be just expressed by a weighted average of the level effect on consumption and the effect on the growth rate in the economy, which is endogenous here. However, remember that we fixed R&D labor, so the growth rate will not be influenced by how much resources used investment, but it's all about just how the fixed amount of R&D labor is allocated across firms. So it's just focusing on the effect of R&D misallocation. Now, the formula for the growth rate I showed you before, so it's just this sales-weighted geometric average of the different step sizes raised to the rate of creative destruction. In terms of consumption level, you can decompose it into those components. So the consumption level is of course proportional to L, which is just the population size. Then there is this misallocation term or allocative efficiency term, due to the markup dispersion across firms. This will be one for the planner, but will be lower than one for the decentralized economy. Then there is the geometric average of the process efficiency in the economy. There is a quality dimension, so that's the geometric average of the quality level. And finally, there is one minus the resources used for overhead. When we look at what the planner is doing in this economy, we see kind of that the planner would achieve, compared to the decentralized market, a 63 basis point higher growth rate. So that's the positive thing. So it allocates more market shares to the high step size firms, and that boosts productivity growth in this economy in the long run. Kind of this comes at the cost also for the planner. The cost is that mostly the overhead cost, the planner enters in a very steep area of the overhead cost schedule for the high step size firms, and this increases the amount of resources used for overhead by 9%. And by doing so, reduces the level. Okay, this is the trade-off the planner faces. Allocative efficiency is relatively small; it's kind of just 1%. This is because the gamma and the warfi are negatively correlated, so there is not much TFPR dispersion or markup dispersion according to this calibration. And process efficiency is also something the planner makes compromises to. So by allocating more market shares to the high step size firms, it forgives, of course, some of the process efficiency by taking away market shares from the high process efficiency firms. So these are the different components. I don't want to emphasize this overall number too much because this doesn't take into account the transition. So it's just focusing on the balanced growth path. Eventually, where we're going with this project is to kind of refine maybe this calibration and then solve for the transition dynamics completely. Yeah. Okay, so let me wrap up for today. So what we kind of show here is we provide a framework of heterogeneity in firms in two dimensions, step size and process efficiency, and they have those two different sources matter. For markup heterogeneity matters when it comes to growth, because we argue that in the quality dimension, it's more likely to generate spillovers across firms. And then we use this method together with some French data to put numbers on the framework and end up concluding that overall in the French context, the data asks for a negative correlation between step size and process efficiency. This mechanism relatively powerful, and we end up with a long-run effect on the long-run growth rate of this R&D misallocation of 63 basis points. Good. Thank you. I think I'm on time.